So the pattern continues in modern universities. With few exceptions, the overall atmosphere for university learning is an atmosphere of autonomy. It follows that
right,
modern.
So there's this whole idea of independence again, right? Autonomy. Right. I can work it out by myself on my own.
Which is ironic considering that universities, the study of the universe comes from the Christian worldview. We're the ones that set up the universities. And sadly, we gave them over to this atmosphere of autonomy. It follows that modern universities are not religiously neutral, though they pretend to be. The atmosphere of autonomy represents a form of a rebellion against God. Idea, there's got to be a separation of church and state, so everything must act as if there is no God. Well, isn't that a religious decree that there is no God? Yeah. That's a weird
that's
form.
That's definitely not a neutral position, right?
right. Yeah, I won't get into the argumentation of why we don't find anywhere a separation of church and state in Constitution and stuff like that. But, this idea of you must be neutral, therefore, you can't believe in God, and you definitely can't make moral choices based on foundation for morality. When you write laws are inherently moral in and of themselves. And so to have this neutral, this attempt of neutrality here is to say, well, as long as you don't do anything religious, then you're being good. But isn't religious just the same as being religious?
You think about that. How is it that they say not believing in God is being neutral, but my believing in God is not being neutral? Well, wait a minute, right? They're not neutral. They don't believe, right? So yeah, there is no neutrality here. That's the point I think that both of us here is trying to help us to see.
Right. He goes on to say then that the atmosphere of autonomy represents a form of deep rebellion against God. Most participants in a university are committed to following their own way, and in so doing so, they're committed to rejecting God's way.
Right. So in all this, he says his point is that Christians and non-Christians do not think alike and do not make the same assumptions. They have different assumptions, in particular, about the role of the Bible and the role of making up one's own mind independently and running, one's own life. The Bible itself contains many examples of this difference between the Christian thinking and the non-Christian thinking. And he tells us that we must reckon with this difference when we prepare an apologetic discussion, right? And so that's where he wants to head to next.
Right. So what are the points for apologetic discussion? So we have... how we will conduct an apologetic discussion with an unbeliever, will we undertake to present evidence for the resurrection of Christ? Well, of course, but how will we do that? Just, throw all the facts on the board and say there, good, done, be done with it. Will we do it without any attention to what people think are the standards for evaluating evidence? Then we run into the danger that unbelievers hear when we never analyze what might be mistaken in their idea of appropriate standards.
Yeah, so he says that we need to challenge underlying assumption. He says that otherwise, without challenging the underlying assumptions, the claims from the Bible tend to get distorted and biblical assumptions, a non-Christian worldview. And so we undertake, he tells us, to analyze the assumptions and commitments that belong to unbelief, and that energize objections to the gospel. And when we consider typical intellectual objections with the Western world, we find at least three vulnerabilities among these various assumptions. And so he wants to kind of walk us through these three vulnerabilities.
Right. So first, we find irony. Non-Christians think of Christian faith as ignorant and dogmatic, but ironically, they have the ignorance and dogmatism of their own view. The typical inhabitant of the university system looks down on Christianity in the midst of considerable ignorance concerning its actual claims, in the midst of massive ignorance about the roots of their own notions.
Right. So here he's suggesting that, they say Christians are ignorant and dogmatic, but he's saying, wait a minute, right? As they don't even know what Christians believe often. And so that's ignorance, right? And they look on Christians look down on Christians. Well, that's being rather dogmatic, right? And so there's an irony there, right? What they're claiming for Christians, they actually have themselves, is what he's getting at.
Right. He feels comfortable affirming autonomy and rejecting Christianity, not because he has analyzed or checked out his commitments, but because everyone around him has similar notions. He has just accepted an atmosphere. And he is ignorant that this is what has happened. Having accepted the atmosphere, he holds it dogmatically. I've created the straw man. I've torn it down. And therefore, I feel good with where I'm at. And then, well, as a Christian, I don't believe what you're saying there. And so it's like, well, but I've already come to this conclusion. So you are the ignorant one. And so you want only women to suffer and go back to being non-voting, kitchen dwellers whose only job is to reproduce. Well, I mean, okay, if that's where you think where we get it from, but the rise of female freedom and rights is founded in the Christian tradition, going back even during the Roman times, and so that doesn't seem to be the case. But too late, you're the caricature that has been portrayed in media, and therefore we can dust off our hands and be done with you.
All right. So it's ironic that the thing that they blame Christians, right, being ignorant and dogmatic, they partake of themselves. Right. So secondly, he says some people might have thought through this autonomy and might reject Christian faith, in a much more informed way. So these people aren't necessarily, as ignorant as some, right? But he says they too have the foundations of their lives on sand. For example, they have no firm foundation for moral judgments, right? If God does not exist, moral standards evaporate into just personal or social preferences, right? So the attempt to announce judgment and pronounce judgment about the alleged ignorance and dogmatism of a Christian evaporates into the will to exercise power, their own personal power or perhaps social power over someone, because they have no basis for morality, right, to make these judgments. And so according to which a person projects his subjective preferences onto others. So if there is no basis for morality and I'm saying somebody else is wrong, all I'm saying is I prefer something else.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was just on Twitter this morning and someone had a cross post where the atheist was saying, if there's one thing that we know, it's that more often than not, non-Christians, atheists are more moral than Christians are. Like, okay, well, what are your objective standards to measure that? Well, no, everything's subjective. Okay, so then you can't call you better. Well, I can call me better in the same way that I can call this band better than this band, right? But that's just your just personal preference. So you're saying I like this over this, but it's not more moral. You can't you can compare it within the scope of your own circle, but you can't compare it to the circle of everything. And so that's the issue that we get when we talk about this. So you Christians, all you want is to bring slavery back, and slavery is wrong, and therefore I don't have a book that tells me that slavery is wrong, therefore I'm more moral. Why? Why is that the case? Why is that moral? And so I can make these type of argumentations, but okay, those argumentations might work for you, but it's not objectively the case. It's just those are the reasons that you want to give for why you believe that this is better than a different way. But it's not objectively better; it's just subjectively better. And so that's the second issue that he goes through. All right, the third one is that non-Christians secretly depends on God and His good gifts day by day. And in issues of morality and knowledge and other spheres, and we kind of talked about we did talk about this in our last book as well. So
he's going to talk a little further about this particular issue.
All three of these vulnerabilities represent possible starting points for apologetic discussions. Very much so. Morality is being a key one. Dr. James Anderson talks about how even with all his knowledge of tag and everything like that, even though he uses the tag type argumentation, The moral argumentation is one of his favorites because it's the one that kind of gets us more down the road in discussions with people. And so Frame's book helps us forward in this process, in these three processes.